Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
All right, I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
I want to speak for yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, we'll tell you if the NFL is headed for an 18-game schedule, but we start with some huge NBA news. All right, the shine is off Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey, the pioneer and hero of NBA analytics. A little more than a year after being named the league's executive of the year and more than a decade after being the first stat nerd to take over a team, Morey began to walk the green mile yesterday. When you make a trade that pairs James Harden and Russell Westbrook, your peers start shouting, "Dead GM walking."
John Coffey.
Morey sent Paul and multiple picks to Oklahoma City for the only guard who can rival Harden in ball neediness and turnovers, Russell Westbrook. But this isn't even Morey's dumbest move. 2 years ago, he gave up Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, and Montrezl Harrell for Chris Paul. In hindsight, that trade was a colossal screw-up. It's almost as bad as leaving Mike D'Antoni in charge of the two most stubborn, narcissistic guards in the association. This whole fiasco reminds me of the time when former ESPN president John Skipper asked me to babysit Joey Chestnut and Kobayashi at a Vegas buffet.
Mm.
Armed security escorted us out after 90 minutes. I mean, this is like Kris Jenner trading Khloe Kardashian for Cardi B.
Oh.
Yeah, Cardi B is younger, but when you check the Carfax and the usage rate, the deal makes no sense.
Wait a minute.
There's only one basketball, and over the last 5 years, neither Westbrook nor Harden has shown any sustained interest in sharing it. And if Morey is expecting D'Antoni to devise and enforce a style of play that allows Harden and Westbrook to effectively coexist, he probably also believes D'Antoni can stop President Trump from tweeting.
Man.
This trade is crazy. It reeks of desperation. It speaks to the futility of reducing men and the games they play to data. The Rockets have tried to win it all with analytics for the past decade. It's failed. It made them interesting and competitive. It has allowed Mike D'Antoni to roll out of basketball and fall asleep on the sideline for the past three seasons. It's made Morey the toast of the new sports media. He's one of them, their Pied Piper. He founded the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, the think tank for sports nerds who have never played a game that doesn't involve at least one controller. Now, it's starting to sound like I hate these guys and I hate analytics. I don't. I just think we've gone overboard with stats. I've made my living reading and evaluating human emotions and personalities and how they impact sports. I think it's more fascinating, fun, and informative to evaluate people more than numbers. The numbers are vital and can help in evaluation, but the numbers, in my opinion, shouldn't be the driving force. LeBron James can't be reduced to a bunch of numbers. The numbers couldn't tell Morey that Harden and Chris Paul would ultimately clash personally. Now Morey is throwing out the numbers. He's throwing a Hail Mary, hoping that Westbrook will address his irresponsible style of play at age 30 while sitting on a contract worth $200 million.
Ching, ching.
Morey is betting that Westbrook's ego has been bruised and humbled by the departures of Paul George and Kevin Durant. Morey, the stat nerd, is attempting to evaluate people rather than numbers. It's too late. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NBA analysts Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Smart for the Rockets to dump Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook.
That wasn't in the Whitlock, huh?
No, it wasn't.
Smart for me. Ellipsis. Smart. Desperate. Yeah, you were right. You were accurate. Back against the wall is synonymous with being desperate. Hey, I got to come out fighting. And they came out fighting. They only had two options this offseason. One was to stay still, stay pat. Hey, man, basically the last couple of years, we've been the second best team in the Western Conference. All right, Golden State is taking some hits. No Klay most of the season, if not the entire season. No KD for sure. They're coming back to us. Let's stay still until the Clippers, Lakers, Denver, Utah, Portland, were acting like donkeys out there in free agency, and they realized, what are we going to do? So guess what they did? They got younger, bigger, faster, stronger, and better at the same position. Mm-hmm. You asked me, is that a good situation? Is that a smart move? It's an absolute genius move in the sense of maybe they're not title contenders, Vegas odds, what most people are saying in consensus, but in terms of confidence, in terms of inspiring that group, oh, they're going to believe a little more that they got a chance because they got durability on top of all the other attributes I just named. So you add it all up, it makes sense to me.
Interesting. I think it's an interesting move. I think Daryl Morey made it out of desperation. He's kind of been a name chaser that looks good on paper, but necessarily when it comes to chemistry and fit, we don't know. I think the easy answer with this is seeing both these guys in their patterns of play, you would think they don't mesh. But I also think when you get a friend on the team, a true friend, I think you're willing to sacrifice some things and realize that, hey, we've both been incredible. You know, both those guys have put up numbers that the league hasn't seen in a long time or ever. But at the end of the day, it's just that. It's just numbers. So if these guys really want to make a run, I think they're both going to have to sacrifice. But like Marcellus said, they've ran into a dynasty the last few years. And I've had them as the second best team, not only in the Western Conference, but the NBA, because if the Warriors were healthy this year, they would have beat Toronto. And to me, Houston's always just been right behind Golden State. So Golden State is not what they once were. They're still very solid. I think people are overlooking them. But I think they could have stayed set the way they were and really made one last push with this team that they have to see what they have. Because, like I said, they continue to run into a dynasty. And
smart move or not?
Kept them. I'll have to wait to see.
That's Matt Barnes, ladies and gentlemen.
I say smart move because if you look at it the last 3 years, they went from tied for one to second to out to the third seed. They wasn't the top two seed. They was the third seed this year behind Denver. So teams are getting better. They wasn't getting better, and they seen that. They needed to make a move with Russ. I think it's a great move to me because you need two stars. You need more than one star to be successful in the NBA today. Mm-hmm. One star ain't going to get it. So the move was right, but the problem is the owner is ignoring everything that he's hearing and seeing on all these TV shows. Great move you've made. You just have the wrong coach. And that move will be for nothing if they don't get another coach in there.
I agree with your point about, wow, they really complicated with Mike D'Antoni as the coach because who's going to be the arbitrator? I don't think it's going to be Mike D'Antoni. However, I just think it's a dumb move for a bunch of the reasons I said. But again, you need two stars, but that do the exact same thing?
Well, I think Russ has way more energy than James. He does way more than James as far as rebounding, assisting. He does way more. Let me ask you this.
When James Harden says, go stand over in this corner while I pat the ball for 20 seconds, what's that do to Russ's energy?
It doesn't do nothing to him because just like if Matt wanted the ball and I had a mismatch and he was down on the post, I'm willing to throw it to my brother because we playing, we're on the same page. We're sacrificing for each other. That's a great move, and I think it can work with them too. But you have to have a coach to hold them accountable. He hasn't held James accountable. Russ has a stronger personality than James. He's not going to be able to hold Russ accountable at all. Russ is going to run over D'Antoni. They need a coach to hold Russ accountable.
I think with your high basketball IQ, you're actually overthinking this one. This is really elementary. And let's go back to elementary school when you got those report cards and you had one of those grades that says, does he play well with others? Remember that?
Yeah.
That's a bad grade in that. That must have been hard to deal with. You know what? Being real, and as Matt said, when it's your friend, we on that seesaw. Right. We got to play well with each other. So D'Antoni's the best coach. Because if you had a coach who was rigid with system and philosophy and said, you have to do this, you have to do this, you're not empowering these two alpha personalities to go out there and work it out themselves. I think this is going to be a beautiful thing where he's going to give them the freedom to figure this out.
Too much freedom might be bad.
No, because everyone, including Jason, has been saying, when is Westbrook going to get off ball? Well, guess what?
He's definitely off the ball.
He's definitely off the ball now, right? So he's going to fall right into a convenient space.
But my question is what Russ has never sacrificed for anyone from the outside looking in. He didn't sacrifice when he had James and KD earlier. So now at this point, is he willing to take a step back for James? And what does that look like? Because let's keep in mind that Chris was probably top two or three point guards in the NBA when he went to Houston and then took a huge step back. And everyone's saying he can't play, but you can't judge someone's statistical output based off if you take what they do away, the best, away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Chris was great with the ball in his hand, making other players better and scoring in spots when he needs to. And I think that was the disconnect was that's what Chris wanted to get back to some. Obviously, James is the best offensive weapon in the game, some may argue, but he's not the distributor. Even though he averaged 8 points a game, he has the ball 90% of the time, so he could average more. So
Eight assists.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's what Chris wanted to get back to was moving the ball, and then when we need a bucket, let James go get it. So now with Russ, like we said, the ball's going to be out of Russ's hands. How does he react to that? But I think the only way to make that work, like I said earlier, these guys both have to sit down and sacrifice, and I think they can because they're friends and they really do mess with each other, and that's the only way this will work.
Listening to you talk makes me think the actual pairing that would have worked is Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook rather than James Harden and Russell Westbrook. And I'm not saying it would have worked at a high, super high level.
Wouldn't have worked at all.
No, that wouldn't have worked either. You know why that wouldn't work?
Same position.
Well, no, not even that. It's the psychology of it. I think Westbrook has not sacrificed. You give him Chris Paul, all due respect, Chris Paul going down the hill, right? He ain't going to sacrifice for Chris. He going to sacrifice for Harden because, one, we raised each other. We young pups together in the league. Two, your game speaks. So I got to respect that game at this stage of my career coming to your team. Chris Paul, I don't know if he would have done that. No?
You know he played with Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
And so if there was a guy, one guy was the MVP right there in OKC,
mm-hmm.
the best player in basketball right there, and Russell Westbrook wasn't willing to go, man, I got to respect your game.
He learned from that because Paul George also had best year. Paul George had his best year pre-injury with Russell Westbrook saying, you go ahead,
but I also
shot selection going down.
But I also think going to someone else's team now, Russ was home. OKC chose him. That was his team over everybody else's. He's going to James's Houston team now. So I think that's something that he obviously has in the back of his mind. But like I said, at the end of the day, these guys are friends. And when you play with your friends, there's a different connect. When you're teammates, cool. When you're friends, it's a lot different. So when you're friends and you're on the same page, if they can get that together, they're going to be a problem.
LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, when they first got to Miami, they were friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard that first year.
Right.
Really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hear y'all on the friends deal, but I'm going to just tell you what Trump's friends a lot of times. It's just ego. And these guys have a right to have enormous egos.
Right.
They've been MVPs. Russell Westbrook, man, Oscar Robertson's the only guy that's ever done what I've done, and I've done it three times. James Harden is like, I'm the best offensive player in the league. And Mike D'Antoni as the referee, who's pretty much a lame duck in the first place, it just seems like a recipe for disaster. I see Daryl Morey taking this Hail Mary saying, you know what, the wind's blowing in a direction where Russell Westbrook has to change. But I've just seen very few young men and even older men with a $200 million contract that's
stuck
remotely interested in change.
Well, to me, I wouldn't use the Miami Heat example in this situation. They actually suffered from, like, ultra deference. Like, we are so cool, and I want to be so respectful. I don't feel comfortable being LeBron James taking the master bedroom in your house.
Yeah, no one wanted to.
No one wanted to step up. And this one, it's the flip. It's like, James, which one going to step down? Because they both want to step up. And I think their friendship is going to be what's going to allow that opportunity. The craziest thing is, my dad used to always tell me when I walk in the kitchen, I walk out, talking about, Dad, I want something to eat. He said, boy, are you hungry or do you want something to eat? There's a difference. You know why? Because if you're hungry, take your butt back in there and make anything work. You know, water and Raisin Bran. It got to go. You know, but if you just want to eat, then we talking convenience.
You're picky.
They're in a desperate situation. They both want that championship. So guess what? They ain't going to be too picky. Yeah. I don't think they're going to pick on each other either.
Now, I think it'll work, but it's going to go downhill not being accountable. I'm telling you, they're going to run over D'Antoni, and midseason, they're going to be looking to make a move or figure it out why it ain't working. It's not going to work because of D'Antoni. I'm telling you, it's not going to work.
Mm. So D'Antoni can't keep them accountable because he allows them to have freedom?
No. Winning, freedom is, you have to give your stars freedom. That's not what I'm saying.
You need respect.
You got to have respect.
The head coach.
Going out there and doing what you want, shooting what you want, turn the ball over, that's not buying in. That's not respecting your coach. That's not doing what you need to do for your teammates. You see what I'm saying? And only a coach can get you to do that. Perfect example. On the Spurs, Pop made it a point to, every time Tim made a mistake, to get in his face and to get on him, because we had to take it after that.
Yeah.
Once you get on the best player, you have to take
everybody
it.
Everybody falls.
Why do you think they were so successful all the time Tim was there? Because everybody bought in and respected how he taught through Tim.
That's what
if you can't get on your top players, if you can't teach through them, the rest of the team not going to respect you either.
I don't know this, and I don't want to speculate. But, again, Marcellus, I think it's just like marriage. even successful in their marriages, a lot of times need counseling.
Oh, definitely.
And so.
In there right now, right. Brother. And Thursday, 2 o'clock.
All right, something wrong with this guy.
Stick around.
Hi, I'm Jason Whitlock from Speak for Yourself. Is that hairline slowly starting to move backwards? Or any bald spots yet? How would you feel a year from now if it's business as usual up there? 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. Well, thanks to science, baldness can be optional. 4hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness for men. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. No waiting room, no awkward in-person doctor visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com. Answer a few quick questions. A doctor will review and prescribe you. Products are shipped directly to your door. Order now. My listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now while supplies last. See website for full details and safety information. This would cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/man. That's 4hims.com, FORHIMS.com/man. 4hims.com/man.
Whitlock and Wiley joined now by former Pro Bowl linebacker LeVar Arrington and making his Speak for Yourself debut, longtime NFL running back Stanford Rout. All right. DB, I'm sorry.
I'm going to say he ain't no way.
Time now for a big story. Let's move to the NFL, where the NFL and the NFLPA are deep in the negotiations over a new collective bargaining agreement. And once again, the issue of expanding the season to 18 games appears to be a major point of contention. The owners have been pushing for a longer regular season for years, with players resisting over concerns about safety. But the owners are now trying to address those concerns directly. As the Wall Street Journal reports, quote, one idea owners have proposed, limiting players to 16 games to assuage health and safety concerns, that would mean even if the Kansas City Chiefs played 18 games, quarterback Patrick Mahomes would play in just 16 of them. All right, this is an idea I have been championing for more than a decade.
Really, talk to me.
And so 18 games. Players are limited to playing 16. Maybe you make an exception for kickers, punters, and potentially quarterbacks.
No.
But everybody else plays 16 games. The Wall Street Journal says it could raise an additional $2.5 billion.
I like that B.
And that's just more money for the players.
I haven't known you for 10 years on this show, but I need a little more than that. You know why? Because if I'm sitting there knowing that I am helping to aggregate $2.5 billion extra in just 2 weeks, guess what I'm starting to say? I want to play those 2 weeks. I'm one of the players, it seems like, in minority who's down for 18. Don't give me 16 of 18. Why not? Because I want dollar for dollar value. I tell you why. I played in yesteryear's football. I'm not going to go the whole tougher era argument. I'm going to go it was harder to play when I played. Mm-hmm. Practices, we had consecutive hitting practices. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the same technology, medical facilities, the same acknowledgement of issues, the CTE, et cetera. So player safety was different back then. I looked forward to games. I'm telling you, I never got hurt in the game. I never got hurt in the game. I got hurt in practice. I got hurt in offseason. Got hurt in OTAs. Got hurt in preseason. Everything. But games, actual games, it doesn't happen that way. It's interesting that the NFL has just played their card. Now, NFL, PA, players, let's play our card, and we know what our card is. Give us the money, we'll do it, because it's just a value conversation for me. Most injuries happen, a third of them, in training camp before the actual games. Then it actually subsides and lulls, and then it spikes at the end. Most practices are easier at the end of the year to preserve the same players. If you can just give me opportunities to play, and not so many painful opportunities to practice, I will go out there and play 18 games as long as you give me my value.
Mm. Listen, as long as they're taking it, it's four preseason games.
Yeah,
let's keep that in mind.
Get that out of here.
There are four preseason games. If you're saying 16, don't just say 16. Play the 18, mm-hmm. but make one preseason game. How about that? Take away a game in the preseason, because generally speaking, in the third preseason game, starters play maybe, what, one, two series, then they take them out. It's really an opportunity to get a look at the talent that are bubble talent, right? Is he too old? Is he good enough for us to put him on the team? So I would do the I guess, adjusting within the preseason, yeah. Right? If you adjust it
I'm
in the preseason,
sure that's going
to
happen.
Right, well, it will have to, right? Because if you're looking at it from four preseason games, you add 18 games, you're going over 20 games that are being played. And again, I come back to Marcellus's point is, if you're playing 16 games and you're saying we're going to hold you out of two, I think that really devalues the message that you're putting out there as a league. Why say you're going to only play 16 games when it's an 18-game season?
I'm going to get to that, but I'm going to let Stanford get
to that. Well, my take on it is I'm annoyed just at looking at that press release simply because, okay.
It's not a press release. It's a news story, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, I'm okay with doing an 18-game schedule, playing in 16, sitting out two. But you got to pay me for all 18. I'm all about my coin because this league, these owners, that's what this is all about. This is about revenue. They're going to get their money for it. So we need, as players, you need to get yours because playing just 16, it seems to me like the owners are going to try to set that up to where they only pay you for the 16 and not for the two remaining games on the schedule.
I completely disagree with y'all jumping to that conclusion because my understanding of the CBA is players – get a certain percentage of the overall revenue.
TV deal.
TGR.
Yes, they do.
Right.
Those, that designated gross revenue.
That goes to the player's salary.
Yeah.
And so if they generate $2.5 billion more dollars, y'all going to get 48, 49, 50% of that, which whatever y'all negotiate.
Goes to the
and
cap.
So to me, when I hear you, Marcellus, and LeVar, and Stanford a little bit like, and Stanford, you were a little bit different, but I'll play all 18.
Yes.
What that makes me say is what I've always believed. Players don't give a damn about safety. It's just a negotiating ploy. They just want the money. I'll play whenever. And so it's just a negotiating ploy. The NFL owners are somewhat taking y'all at y'all's word. Oh, y'all concerned about player safety? We got a way to generate more money that we'll share with you all at the same rate or whatever y'all negotiate. If y'all agree to this, maybe we'll give you an extra percentage point on the deal. This makes perfect sense. And to me, for NFL players.
You're right, but I think the way you articulated it, it pitted it against each other. The NFL heard the players talk about player safety. Go to a veteran right now and ask them, how is it to practice and play right now?
Exactly.
Easier than ever, bro. I know guys who went through 2-3 eras, and they're like, I'm going to play as long as I can because we don't touch each other anymore.
Right, right.
We can't hit for consecutive practices.
Right.
So the NFL heard that message. So we don't have to keep championing for player safety. Now, the NFL's coming back with their other message. We want some more money out of this, some more games.
Y'all don't want more money?
Hell yes, but guess what?
I think it's more of an integrity deal, though. Don't you think? See, I think it's
that's
more.
Why I'm like, I'm playing 18. I want all of it.
I mean, if you, again, you're going to get the additional revenue. It's going to enhance player contract.
But how do you position playing 16 games and some of your best players assuming, right, that you can't play all 18 games.
And that's exactly
how do you justify the two games that they don't play?
Y'all are acting like Clayton Kershaw, who only pitches in 40 games a year, 35 games a year. That y'all like his because he didn't play in 162, he gets paid less.
But
that's not my argument.
Let me ask you this.
That's not my argument.
Why do you think they're proposing this mandate of only playing 16 in an 18 game season?
Because of the health issue. Because the media has been killing them on the health issue.
I agree with that.
And players have been killing them on the health issues. And so they said, look, we got a way to play 18 games. It'll change our game quite a bit, in my view, in some interesting ways. More strategy to debate, blah, blah, blah.
Like who's going to play?
Yeah, and
when are they going to play?
Generate $2.5 billion. Y'all still going to get y'all's 49, 50% of that, and we're going to spend it on your salaries.
Just
everybody's
what are the rules?
Go up.
Now, the way I look at it, and I'm not sure both of you guys how y'all look at it as well, but for me, I look at it as it possibly could potentially be a situation like in the preseason where the owners, they get all of the money, all of the revenue from the ticket sales, from the concession stand, from the TV rights, but the players only get, what is it, $1,000 during training camp or preseason?
Yeah, we don't get paid in preseason like that.
How are we sure?
They're not going to add two more games and not pay y'all.
Hold on. Here's the thing. Let's reconcile a few things. One, statistically, we get paid by what we could put down on record at the end of the year. It feels good in the moment, but at the end of the year, how many sacks you had? You had 10 plus? Okay, so if I want to get as many opportunities, let's keep this congruent to a 16-game schedule. One, that's one. Two, they've made it easier to get to 16 games by the practice schedule and player safety. Guess what that means for me? I got a little more juice in me for the 18 because of this reason. If the pot's going to grow to $2.5 billion under a 16/18 game schedule, could it grow to four if I guarantee the fans who are going to miss out on two games of some star players, can I get some of that $4 billion instead of the $2.5 billion?
That's my biggest issue. I'm not debating your – I think that your point is clear, and I think that it makes sense, the whole health issue. A lot of guys will play the health card when it's convenient to play that card. Yeah. I agree with that. But I'm looking at – and I'm not even looking at it from the pay perspective. How do you make the rules on an 18-game season where you're only going to play them 16 games?
How do you make the rules?
Tell the fans
that's strange to me. So in other words, are you going to say you get to choose when you play Peyton Manning or Tom Brady and this, that? What are the rules on that?
Y'all act like y'all don't do it in basketball, football, and
NFL. But it doesn't happen in football. It does not happen in football.
But guys, as complicated as it sounds, it's not that
hard. I think when you're selling a ticket holder and a person that's holding stake within that franchise and you say the season is on the line.
Gentlemen, let me explain to you what will happen.
Okay.
If they go with the 18-game schedule and everybody plays all 18. All these little woke media people that everybody
they woke.
They
up again.
Oh, my God, the NFL owners, they're so exploitive. The slave masters have now demanded you play 18 games. They don't care about these black players. They don't care. And they don't want the PR hit.
They don't want the
people
smoke.
Are sitting. We had John Gruden and whatever his name was, the baseball guy that they let call football, Monday Night Football, McDonald or whatever his name was, on TV, Sean McDonough calling a football game a travesty and this is grotesque, what's going on out here. They're trying
it
to avoid a PR nightmare of people sitting there, oh my God, they're just throwing these guys out here. And every time somebody gets hurt in week 17 or 18, well, my God, the NFL owners have forced them to do this and that. Again, it's not...
I think it's a terrible strategy.
There's reasons why they're suggesting.
That's a terrible strategy.
The biggest hole is
I think it becomes
worse.
They
gave an example. They gave the example of this year. One in every 7 years the Cleveland Browns play, I want to say it was the Kansas City Chiefs. So this year, you go out there and it's latter season. Maybe you got playoffs locked up. Maybe you don't. And then Baker Mayfield shows up in Kansas City.
And has to sit out.
And those season ticket holders sitting there like, you mean we are going to watch a game without Baker Mayfield?
He has to sit out.
They'll probably call it load management.
I went to a game like that last year. I'm an L.A. Chargers fan. Ambassador went to the game. Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt the week before. Guess where my interests were?
Elsewhere.
It was elsewhere. That's why I feel like that.
Guys, look at it from the ramifications of players that have incentives or escalators in their contracts. If you're Antonio Brown, one of the top guys in the league at receiver, and you're
playing 16 games, he's going to be evaluated on 16.
But
he never plays 16.
But
go check his – he plays 14 most of the time because of injuries. Go look at his
– but the team –
go look at his stats.
But he still has opportunity.
But
I'm assuming –
but y'all acting like guys don't get hurt and just – guys get hurt. A lot of these times when – let's say 30% of the time when a guy gets held out, it's going to be for health reasons. He's banged up.
Yeah.
It's people sit out all the time, including Antonio Brown.
I'm assuming the team is going to choose which two games you sit out.
Yeah.
So if you have a player that is reaching that possible incentive in his contract, and let's say he's going against a team that has a porous secondary, like the Oakland Raiders have had several years.
We're
going
to rest you.
They're going to rest you that game because you won't reach your incentive. So now they don't got to pay you that extra half million.
Stanford.
Say it,
you
Stanford.
He cash rules everything around me.
And I done seen that happen before this rule change.
That's my point. It goes on anyway regardless.
But you don't want to just go ahead and enforce the issue and now give the team more of a platform to do something like that to a player.
They've been devising game plans and everything based on contracts for years.
That is true. I had a team.
There's no way to justify saying you're not going to play in two games.
I will say this.
There's no way.
My example was actually was Cleveland versus Phoenix, Arizona this year. That's what's going to happen in Phoenix with Baker Mayfield. Two, perfect is the enemy of good. There's no perfect system. I think this is a good start, but I don't think this is a good landing, a good ending.
By no means.
Because there's too many ways to exploit both sides and not take full advantage of what they're really trying to do, which is just get more money.
It's a media headache.
So let's just get more money.
That's a media headache of mass proportion of the one you're saying they're trying to avoid.
No, it's really not, because, again, if you look across all sports, Tiger Woods didn't play golf last weekend, his choice.
It's not football.
Clayton Kershaw doesn't play every game. It's not baseball.
Yeah.
LeBron James ain't going to play every Lakers game.
Yeah.
Football, it has been the case, but it can change.
We have the least amount of games.
Basketball's 82. Baseball's 162.
Yeah, the NFL used to not play black quarterbacks. It changed.
Well, they used to not play.
That's a different context.
Things changed.
They used to not play 16 games.
Yeah.
They used to not play 14 games. They used
Thank
to play
you.
But that's why college
changed.
Football still
But they
is
have
came.
Never said we have 14 games, came. But you only playing in 12. Yeah. They ain't never
it's
said
new.
That.
What's the matter with new?
Because that is all centered around revenue for the owners in the league.
What
that's
is
not
instigating?
Something that's for the players.
That's your instigating.
And then once again,
Stanford, come on, man. We got to be. You do know. Look, if they raise an additional $2.5 billion,
you're going to get
players are going to get that.
Okay,
money.
They're going to have to.
We're getting that.
So who says
they're giving
which two
the players
that can't play?
The coaches and the organization. They get to decide who starts at running back, who gets to play DB.
And
we
haven't and you don't think that there's some discretion?
Hold on now.
There's some discretion that's going to be involved?
We have not even brought up roster, Marcellus. 53 men. How you going to sit them? How you going to sit them?
Next segment, you two guys are exiting. This is at my discretion. We're going to talk basketball. Y'all won't be in the next segment.
Y'all still get paid.
Your check won't change. We're actually doing football the next season.
Look at you. See, there
all
you
right,
go.
Coming up.
I told you the rule didn't work.
Hey, college football fans. Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington, and Stanford Rout are back. Let's return to the NFL, where Dak Prescott is entering the final year of his rookie deal and is expected to sign a big new contract with the Cowboys any day now. A lot of people have questioned whether Dak is really worth $30 million plus per year he's likely to get, but Dak says he's not planning to take a hometown discount, explaining, quote, "For somebody to say you can only take so much because of the salary cap, or you can only do this or that, I don't know how fair that is to say."
That's how he said it.
"Because with gambling, with everything going on in this league, everything is going to continue to keep going up, 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 up. It's important for all these guys to get every bit of their worth. I want to see Zeke the highest paid. I want to see Amari the highest paid. I want to see myself be up there." All right, so Dak Prescott.
Dak used to be polished. Yeah. Articulate.
He got real gangster with it.
He stripped all that on him. Damn.
All right. Is Dak's comments proof that contract negotiations between he and the Cowboys are going poorly?
Yes, absolute proof. If you listen carefully, two things you'll hear and pick up on. One, both sides are leaking oil right now. And both sides really, are hypersensitive to where this contract will land in the court of public opinion and its fan base. Stephen Jones started this gangster stuff. He started this right after the Super Bowl, coming out talking about Dak's contract in the media. You know why? Because he wanted to see where it was going to land.
What was I gonna say?
And then now Dak is forced to respond to do the negotiation outwardly, because he wants, one, all the critics to understand, I hear y'all. I know what y'all saying. I'm not a $35 million quarterback. But damn it, it's appreciation. There's inflation. So appreciate me and my value and having the second most wins at my position since I entered the league. And what I've done in terms of leadership and building this team and done more, as you even said, than a Tony Romo at the time when he got paid in terms of divisional success and being a playoff quarterback. That said, you could just see that they both have rabbit ears. And it's a sad state. Because just pay the man and deal with the pressure and all the issues that come from it. But right now, they're trying to read all the tea leaves.
I definitely think that this is a PR stunt by Dak Prescott, because clearly the talks aren't going well. You can tell he's trying to be politically correct, because he wants to sit up there and say Zeke, Amari Cooper, they all deserve to be paid, you know, up there in the league. And then also, it has a hint of disingenuous. That's how I see it, because
that's why I read it the way that I read it, but continue.
Because because Dak Prescott would be a fool to take a team-friendly deal. The Dallas Cowboys would be a fool to pay him top money, $30, $35 million a quarterback, simply because, and I think Dak knows this, if they pay him top money, they're not going to be able to pay Zeke what he's going to command. They're not going to be able to pay Amari Cooper. They're not even going to be able to pay Byron Jones what he's going to want when his contract comes up.
And then
guess what? Then you're left on a team that is dearth with talent, and now you got to bring it all on yourself as a quarterback, and he's not that type of quarterback. He's not a Tom Brady. He's not a Drew Brees. He's not a Ben Roethlisberger. So I think that, once again, you can definitely tell talks are not going well because you would have not seen this PR stunt that he tried to pull. And obviously, it's something that he thinks people can't see through, but it's too obvious for me.
Donations. We got past the collection plate over here. Damn, Stanford, leave him alone. He gonna get paid still.
I said it yesterday with the Melvin Gordon situation. I after being a part of a tremendously high-profile contract screw-up in my career, I think you got to work to try to keep things internally, even if the franchise takes it to the media. I'll say this. When I went through what I went through with the Redskins back when I was playing with them, the reason why I came out on top in terms of public opinion with the fan base, and the reason why I was able to walk away with my head held high and have integrity and feel good about how everything ended, was because I didn't turn it into a messy public situation, even though they worked very, very diligently to try to assassinate my character. I look at a guy like Dak Prescott. I was coming off of Pro Bowl seasons, off of having a different defensive coordinator every single year. And if you understand how hard it is to make a Pro Bowl, see how hard it is to make it under a different defensive coordinator.
Yes.
Dak Prescott did not have an amazing year by all, you know, by all things measured, his sophomore season. It was a sophomore slump. He had an amazing rookie year, came out of nowhere in a lot of people's books. He gained the respect and the admiration. When you have the admiration and you're a media sweetheart and you're playing for America's team, don't ruin that. Don't ruin that. You are, let Zeke do that. Let Zeke be the character, right? You're the quarterback of the team.
I'm gonna tell you why he's doing it, though. It's very obvious. It's what Dak, this is speculation on my part, but what Dak is reacting to is the Pro Football Focus story that trashed him. And that, what speculation on my part, what Dak and his representatives believe is that somebody in the Cowboys organization dialed up Pro
and
Football Focus.
And they very well may be.
Tell the truth on this, dude.
They very well.
You got to counter that, LeVar. You can't sit there and let them write the narrative for you. They called him a profoundly average quarterback. And then he's going to walk around talking about, I want $30 million? You can't have those two go together.
Here is why I will disagree with – I don't disagree with the premise of what you're saying. I will disagree with the approach. If you are in your community – and you're rooted in your community, can you go to San Diego and people will listen and respect what it is that you say?
Yeah.
Okay. See, what we don't understand is the connection between the fan and the player. I think it's a lot of times in the media and even by the franchises themselves is underestimated. The reason why I came out on top and the reason why I said keep it internal, if you're willing to put it on the line for those dollars, that means you see your value in some type of shape, way, or form. And for what it's worth, you're probably assuming that the fan base feels that way as well, right? I was in the streets, not industry, right? So the reason why I didn't have to talk trash about the Redskins and what was going on is because they already knew. I don't have to go to the media and go and put it all out there because I'm already out there.
The quarterback contract negotiation where a quarterback's ever said anything like this, where a quarterback has been publicly making public statements like this. Agents do this. To me, when Dak goes this route, they've hit the panic button.
They have reacted
to the Pro Football Focus article that spelled out in numbers, like, hey, bro, we doing you a favor.
And you took your value down.
Yeah, and he's now been provoked, and I think this undermines, he looks a little arrogant here, where he's always played the humble role.
Yeah, clearly Dak Prescott is getting thin skin. He's always kind of been the first 3 years, the guy who's going to go ahead, shed off all the criticism. He's just going to go ahead, keep it straightforward, and just go ahead and be always PC. But you can tell right here he's starting to get thin skin, and this is really just going to come down to a game of chicken between Dak Prescott and the front office. Who's going to blink first? Who's going to get, are they going to get the team-friendly deal, or is he going to get that $30-35 million that they're trying to negotiate right now? And I think that for Dak Prescott, if he wants to win a Super Bowl, and then he can surpass everything that Tony Romo did, because we all know he never won anything for the Dallas Cowboys. If he wants to win a Super Bowl, he's going to have to go ahead and come up off that mountaintop and take a little bit less. That way they can go ahead and keep the player.
I'm going to tell you the danger the Cowboys run into. Let's say he takes $27 million but feels bad about it, and his attitude changes. He's not the guy that stood by Jerry Jones during the anthem controversy. Again, Dak to me, and I think he's represented by Todd France, right now with this move, they're being out-negotiated. Mm. Look at what the way Russell Westbrook handled his situation with the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson. He never put his name on anything. Mm. He handled it with leaks. But he wasn't quoted saying anything. He used his wife. She wants to go to New York. And then Bates had his agent say, you know what? You better have my money by such and such a day or there's going to be a problem.
And you're absolutely correct. And you know why? Because they are in different places psychologically. And you want to know why they're different psychologically? Because their games are different. I'm going to tell you from my own experience, because I was blessed to start at the bottom, Ivy Leaguer, he ain't going to make it in the league, go all the way to the top, all pro, pro bowler, he getting it. To all the way back down, it's about time to do some commentating, ain't it, big dog? Dak just told on himself. Mm. It's a fear-based comment that comes. And I remember when I started to play, sorry, not as well, and I remember the difference when somebody finally told me I was not playing as well. Ooh. And when you go in those negotiations and Todd gets on the phone with you, Dak, he's giving you pure uncut dope. And he said, this is what they're saying. And it hit him.
It stings.
Because he knew it. He validated what they're saying. Now, Russell Wilson hears that. He's like, what?
No way.
That is no way. I know I'm doing everything. And the fracture in his mind is finally what we just saw in those comments.
You know, the sad thing about it, Whit, is you take a guy who has, again, you have the admiration of the fan base. Now, by putting yourself out here like this and presenting yourself this way, if they do give him the money, he will never be able to live down or live up to what it is that they give him. He done. You done. I say it with RG3. I'm going to say it right now. He done.
Damn.
You done.
All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself.
Well,
the most fun you can have talking sports. Whitlock and Wiley, Stephen Jackson and LeVar Arrington are back. Time now to get antisocial.
Yeah.
Our man Darnell is still off.
Damn, Darnell winning.
At a wedding. Uncle Jimmy's filling in. Don't do the Hulkamania deal.
Please, no. Come on.
You look dehydrated. No, Hayden, why come I can't?
You look dehydrated.
Tell me what I can't do. Come on, man. Let's do this.
Why you got the bacon neck shirt on, though? What you doing?
Go ahead. What's popping?
Man, look, man. All right, man. Baconator over there. Can we talk about Josh Norman?
Yeah.
Why not? All right, man. The Redskins cornerback went to Spain.
Me too.
To do the running of the bull.
I ain't do that.
All right, this video of him jumping over a bull went viral.
Yeah.
Should the Redskins be upset about this?
He survived, so no.
No.
But don't do it again.
Exactly. Don't do it again.
Don't do it again.
One time that bull gonna win. Sooner or later, that bull gonna win. We used to hop over cars in high school. Sure. I remember that. Remember that?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it used to be like,
you weren't really, to do.
You weren't really hopping over cars, though, Marcellus.
I did. I hopped over
now, the while I was moving. Like
I had a 39 and a half inch vert. I had hops.
And y'all's vertical is different than ours, by the way.
We
don't get a step. We don't get a step. Y'all get a step.
No, not y'all. I'm a shooter. I'm not a jumper. I never could jump.
I'm gonna say he does have a. They should have a problem. You know why? Not because he cleared the bull when he jumped on and it went viral. I'm thinking the man might have some emotional issues that he's dealing with here, man. Like, you playing in the NFL, you got a nice little contract going on.
I even jeopardize it.
What you jumping bulls for, man?
That's a little too much.
Ain't that funny? Like, when you go home and your boy be like, man, I bet you I could beat you running. I'd be like, I bet you can too. He'd be like, no, let's go race. I'm like,
no.
I got too much to lose, brother.
Pull that hamstring if you want to, right?
Good point, though.
Thank you.
Good point. All right, let's stick with football, you guys. Mike Vrabel.
I know.
Told a podcast that he would cut off his
you know what.
What is the you know what?
In exchange for a Super Bowl ring. He was justified this by saying, you guys will be married for 20 years one day, and you won't need it. On a scale of 1 to 10, what type of crazy is Mike Vrabel stuck on?
21.
11. Yeah. 21. I'm going to always need mine. Well, I don't know what he's talking about.
I've been married.
Speak for yourself,
I've been married for 14 years. And I'm proud to say every time I go home, it's like the first time. Like, I see my chick and I'm like, man, I did all right. She got my last name because of me. I'm telling you right now, I'm not trading my manhood for no nothing. Super Bowl ring, let alone something else. Because when I come home, as long as the dipstick is in for the oil. For the oil in your car. You know what I mean? You gotta have the oil in your car. Make sure that the level of the oil is as high as it needs to be.
Damn, I thought
and
I
you're
was
gonna be all right. Man, I thought you're gonna be all right.
Nothing is worth my manhood.
I'm sorry.
Hey, he must got a low usage rate.
Right?
I'm sorry.
He got last in the league usage rate. Pro Football Focus says your usage rate too low.
When your engine locks up, you can't use the car no more.
Look, I'm gonna tell you this. His wife's DMs are blowing up right now.
They on her head.
But good luck.
I knew you were going to say that.
Time now. Uncle Jimmy's question of the day.
Aisha Curry. Who said that? Aisha Curry.
Take it away.
All right. Speaking of my guy, Steven Jackson posted something on Instagram yesterday. I need y'all to take a listen to what my guy had to say. Listen up.
Look at it, wasn't burning.
First of all, it should be a rule. If you ain't averaged 20 points in it at all in your career for a season, or if you ain't averaged 10 for a career, you shouldn't be talking basketball on TV.
All right, let me add this. If you ain't half baked on Instagram, you shouldn't be calling out people about not averaging 10 points.
I'm half-baked all the time. Second, I'm going to ask y'all a question.
Hold on, man.
Man, for
your
real.
Your boy Matt Barnes.
9.7. You rounded up to 10 points.
I want you to say this in front of Matt Barnes.
I talk to him every day.
I want you to say this today right now.
I talk to him every day.
He ain't averaged 10, though.
He know what I said.
He ain't averaged 10, though.
He said I get to round up.
You get to round up.
That's close. Yes. That's close.
All right, let me ask you this, Steve. Let me ask you this. Bruce Bowen.
What about Bruce Bowen?
He can't talk.
He won some championships. He wasn't that good.
That
though.
Wasn't criteria.
He was a great defender.
That wasn't your criteria.
He was a great defender in the league. He wasn't a defensive player of the year. He can't talk.
I said he was a great defender.
Yeah.
But he can't talk.
That don't qualify.
Yay, nay.
It's about buckets.
Yay, nay.
To me, he was a great defender.
Okay, explain yourself first before we start.
Yeah, what provoked the comment?
Yeah, what's this about?
I'm gonna ask y'all a question. Who has more to prove? Steph Curry, a guy with 3 championships and 2 MVPs, or James Harden?
James Harden.
We know that.
Just quick. Okay, so for a basketball player to go on TV and say that kills all our integrity.
He said Steph Curry did.
No, Damon Jones.
Damon Jones.
I think
it kills his credibility.
It killed all basketball players' integrity because it seemed like you're going out there and having an agenda.
I think it kills
everybody in their right mind knows Steph has nothing to prove with 3 championships and 2 MVPs. If you go on TV and say, we know you live in Houston, we know that you're friends with the guys, go find another job. You're killing our integrity. Mm. And I had to say something because this is my job.
I just want to know, am I good?
You my. hey, you my. I almost said it. Right. I almost said it. You know you my brother.
All right, Stacks, hold on. This
I'll
is my
back,
pushback.
I'll be back next segment.
I thought it was good smoke. I thought it was great. But I also thought it was like convenient criteria for you to get in and then, you know, like to exclude a lot of other people. Like, let's just be real. Why is it not like all NBA or all-stars and stuff? Why is it just 10 points? Like, because 10 points is still scrub work, ain't it?
That's
obtainable. No, 10 points? Nah, the average 10 in the NBA is not bad.
No, that's not bad. Myself, I'm going to defend him.
Okay. That's not bad.
Honest to goodness. I'm not even going to put a name on it. But, man, if you just barely made it in the NBA because you were tall for a bunch of years.
Are we doing this?
I just don't know. When you come out with statements like this, it does make it seem like, well, this is the only way anybody will take me
troll work.
Pay attention to
troll
me.
Trolling.
But you can't say stuff like that on national TV when people are expecting us to give our honest opinion and not say stuff because we're trying to be friends with people. And that's basically what he said on TV.
But I think the beauty of it is that you got real cats that have done it and have been there calling it out. I think that's what makes it pretty cool. Because, I was saying before, it's levels to this, right? I can speak to things that apply to being a perennial pro bowler, at times being an all pro or in college being an all American. but I'm not going to be a Hall of Famer.
Right.
So
if I start
going into the realm of talking about what the Gold Jackets are going to talk about, now I've went out of my lane. Mm. I can stay in my lane. He can stay in his lane and talk to it to the level of which I was on the team with these guys. I understand it from the level of playing with these guys. I wasn't that guy, but I played with these guys. Mm. But so it's the credibility of it.
I also know, too, since we're being real, I didn't get on TV because somebody made a call so I can talk good about him.
Oh.
I got on TV from my natural hard work and opportunity.
Ooh.
Let's keep it real.
Damn, Monday. No, we got Monday question of the day.
Let's not go there.
A lot of smoke.
Stop that mic.
Russell Westbrook.
Check.
All right, you want to party like a football star?
Hell yeah.
Well, Saturday, July 20th at the one and only Dre's Beach Club on the Las Vegas Strip, you can join Ty Dolla $ign, that dude Marcellus Wiley, and the entire Speak for Yourself crew at the pool party of the summer. For tickets or more information, visit dresgroup.com.
I'm going to come heckle that.
You look like you already there on the fly.
I'm already in that zone, ain't I?
Welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes are back. All right, let's move to Houston, which is where the Thunder just sent Russell Westbrook in exchange for Chris Paul and a bunch of draft picks. Russ has been top dog in OKC since Kevin Durant left, averaging a triple-double in all three seasons, but now he joins a team with another MVP in James Harden, who has been known to occasionally enjoy somewhat being a ball-dominant style player.
You think?
Will the triple-double streak survive the move to Houston?
I'm going to let basketball players talk, but the points will be the same, the assists will suffer, and the rebounds will go up because all them long three misses, you know that jackrabbit going to go get all those. So that's why I say he falls just short of the triple-double.
I think it stays. I think they find a way to make this work. Like I said, these guys are on the same page. Let's hope they sit down and have a long talk and figure out, you know, knowing that these two guys, if we have any shot of making a title run, it's going to be between us. And I think you see amazing play from both of them this year.
Again, but OKC did a lot of things to allow Russell to do that.
No, they did not, Whit. Mm. They did not allow him to get you.
Get
Whit.
It.
Go ahead.
You can't allow somebody on your team to get a triple-double. They go get it. And you can't allow them for 3 years straight.
Mm.
He's going there. He's going to get the same triple-double because his energy and the way he plays the same. They're not going to change it.
Do you think Russell Westbrook took the court saying, I want to get a triple-double tonight?
Why not? I say that too, but I don't do it.
Some people go on the court, I want to win tonight. I think he said, I want a triple-double.
No, his attitude in winning, if I can get a triple-double, it's going to help us win.
But
you can't take a triple-double away from a guy. In the NBA, you averaging a triple-double.
Chris Paul's assist totals were the worst since his rookie year playing in Houston because, again, you stand off to the side while James Harden is the human.
That's not
self-assist.
Russ's personality, though. That's not Russ's personality. They Russ going to get hit.
They might have a jump ball you just against said that. Each other and get the ball and still bring it up. But I think back to your point saying that Russ says, I'm going to go on the court and get a triple-double. He may say that because he needed to do that for that team to win. He needed to have a lot of assists, a lot of rebounds, a lot of points for them to win. So if that just happens to be a triple-double.
That's how he plays, too, though.
Right. He does everything.
The reason why I know it's premeditated and calculated is because of the night that he did the 2020 deal. And because he wanted to shout out.
That wasn't impressive to you?
It was, but again, he's not about winning. And I think when he moved
they
over
won that game, by the way.
I'm about to say, and that's in.
Against the Lakers.
That's in the efforts to win. Like
when he moves to the Houston, they're going to have no choice but to focus more on winning, not on a gimmick. And so I just think Chris Paul's assist numbers went down playing in Houston. Russell Westbrook's assist numbers are going to go down. And I think when you're standing off in the corner, half asleep when James Harden
is doing
his thing, you're going to get less rebounds.
You know, it's weird. It's funny, like playing sports all those years, some people got caught up in fundamentals when fundamentals are nothing but a means to an end. The end is did you get the ball in the hole? The end is, did you get the quarterback on the ground? And a lot of times we get lost in the complexion of things. This is not something that should get lost. A triple-double is in process to serve your team in winning.
Who gets
triple-doubles and is like,
I'm going to get a triple-double so we can lose.
Let me really irritate you. Listen to this. Listen to what I'm about to say. Before we go, I'd like to address how the NBA in Oklahoma City should remember Russell Westbrook's time in a Thunder uniform. Of course, there are already calls for the Thunder to retire the Mad King's number zero, his triple-double feats, and his MVP trophy over the course of 11 years with the team, he's the greatest Thunder of all time and arguably the most electrifying athlete in the state of Oklahoma since Barry Sanders ran wild at Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. But I think Westbrook's impact on basketball extends well beyond the state of Oklahoma. That's why I believe the Golden State Warriors should also retire Westbrook's number zero. His contributions to the Golden State dynasty should never be forgotten. Man. Without Westbrook's angry, self-absorbed, trigger-happy style of play, Kevin Durant likely never would have left OKC for the Warriors.
Man.
Golden State owner Joe Lacob announced immediately after Durant's departure for Brooklyn that KD's number would be retired. Why not a double ceremony?
Classic.
That also celebrates the man primarily responsible for delivering Durant to the Bay. Hold your applause. I'm not quite done. I would be remiss to overlook Colin Cowherd's stellar performance in the Russell Westbrook saga. It would be negligent for those of us who love the NBA to fail to honor the host of the herd. For at least the last 5 years, Cowherd withstood the criticism of his media peers and former NBA players and pointed out that Westbrook was an overvalued cancer who was nearly impossible to play with. When Westbrook won the league's MVP in 2017 after completing his first stat-padding triple-double season, Cowherd did not waver.
He's a delusional ball hog, and he's bad on television games. And against 500 or better teams, and those are the games that get on TV, he shoots 39%, not on threes. He shoots 39%. LeBron, close to 55%. And KD leaving was good for Westbrook? What am I watching? 9 total players and 6 teammates who get considerable minutes shoot a better field goal percentage, and he won't stop shooting.
All right, in 2017, Cowherd's critics, including yours truly, thought he was trolling Westbrook as an attention grab. How can you disrespect a man averaging a triple-double? No one's averaged a triple-double since Oscar Robertson. Cowherd's take was and is the stuff of legend, and for that, Cowherd should be honored alongside Russell Westbrook. If Westbrook's fraudulent stats are going to be immortalized, should we not immortalize the man who recognized Westbrook's fraudulence first? When the Thunder raised Westbrook's zero to the rafters, I'm nominating Cowherd to introduce him. Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes are back. Let's move to Oklahoma City, which is what Chris Paul is doing. After being traded for Russell Westbrook yesterday, Paul is now in his mid-30s and came painfully close to unseating Golden State during his time in Houston. But for now, he's been exiled to a rebuilding Thunder team and reportedly will be shipped to yet another team before all is said and done. Question here is, do you feel bad for Chris Paul and the way his career is ending?
I don't feel bad for him for several reasons. One, I feel bad for Carmelo Anthony and Dwight Howard. That's the lowest category of good, great player that I feel bad for. So that's the lowest of lows. Chris Paul, I used to feel bad for him, how everything worked out for him. He didn't have a championship and people were knocking him for that. But then he had an opportunity to redeem it all. And then he went to Houston and had a chance, had the hamstring. Damn. All right, I feel bad for Chris. Bad timing. Never got an opportunity to really win a championship. And then this year he was healthy. And this year was the redemption year for me. And I was like, oh, go get it, Chris. And then I saw, for whatever reasons, the team construction, him and James not getting along, whatever it was, it didn't work out. Then I said, I remove myself from feeling bad for Chris Paul because he's not in the worst category where we know others dwell. So Chris Paul is just in a situation like a lot of greats. Not everybody going to win a championship. It's all good, Charles Barkley and others. I'm not feeling bad for Chris because he still has opportunity. Looks like lay on his feet and do some damage.
And he's still getting a check, a crazy check. So I don't feel sorry for him. I mean, he's a guy that I always wanted to play with in my career. I never got a chance to. And he's not the first person this happened to. Yeah. It's happened to a lot of guys that we care about and that we play with. So, I mean, it's a part of the business.
Mm-hmm. I don't feel bad, one, because he's blessed. He has a beautiful family. He's making a lot of money. And his career's not over. You know what I mean? I think people looked at his diminished stats last year but have to take into consideration the situation he was in. I'm sure whatever situation he lands in next outside of OKC, he'll get back to the Chris Paul we know and love. May not be the staggering numbers he used to be, but he could still play. He could still lead a team. And he's still got a lot more basketball in him.
I do feel sorry for him, and I for one reason. He had a chance to get to L.A. with Kobe Bryant and when the Lakers were rolling, and David Stern stepped in and stopped that. that changed the entire narrative, I think, for Chris Paul. Yeah. And to me, the thing I really like about Chris and the reason why I feel sorry for him, one of my favorite players, leaders of all time, is Isaiah Thomas. And Chris kind of patterned himself after Isaiah. Yep. Isaiah led the union. Chris Paul leads the union. I think that L.A. opportunity with Kobe was tremendous, and it was taken away from him, and he's never going to have the basketball legacy that I think he wanted for himself as a champion and a great leader. It's probably not going to happen. I feel bad.
You know what's funny about that? He never got over that either. If y'all listen to his introductory press conference as a Clipper, he said exactly what he was going to say as a Laker. He was talking about, oh, I love this franchise, great organization, all the success. That wasn't the Clippers then. He brought that to the Clippers. He was still stuck on being a Laker. Yeah. And amazing how that really thwarted him in a different direction. And it just seems like if the forecast is out there for what Chris Paul is going to do going forward, it might not end cleanly like for a lot of guys. Kobe, how did it end for Kobe? Yeah. Wheels came off, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jordan was a little different, but it still wasn't Jordan. Mm-hmm. It just seems like Chris is going to put himself in that position, too.
I mean, I just say this about Chris. I mean, you hear a lot about him, but he's someone that I would go to war with every single day. Outside of Kobe, Allen Iverson, Steven Jackson, one of the most competitive people I've ever played with. He cares about nothing more than winning. It's never been about him. It's never been about his stats. It's been about him winning. And like I said, he doesn't have to, his legacy doesn't have to end with the championship for him to still be one of the greatest point guards we've ever seen.
I think, and we talked a little bit off there, he's got an abrasive personality. Yeah. And I can relate to that because I do as well. And he's not afraid of conflict. And that he's paying a price for that right now. Mm. Again, in the right situation, this guy's one of the great leaders in NBA history. He just never got that right situation.
Well, you got good insurance.
Uncle Jimmy's here. You're working TSA today or what?
Oh, hell no. I ain't getting on that flight.
Oh, definitely.
I'm good. I'm walking.
All right, you got your big dummy of the day, your big dummy.
Oh, man, this is a good one, man.
All right, go ahead.
The big dummy go to the person that had the big dumbass look on their face while Marcellus was telling a story about his daddy saying, son, are you hungry or you just want something to eat? And you just sit there like, oh, God, I remember them days. Oh, God. Man, you got to stop that. You on TV, Whit. Damn. You saw it, didn't you, Merkles?
I didn't, but I can imagine it. I know he was gazing. He was gazing.
All right, do we have a highlight?
Wishes or something.
We have a highlight from our discussion earlier about Chris Paul.
Oh, that was a good one.
This isn't even Maury's dumbest move. 2 years ago, he gave up Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, and Montrezl Harrell for Chris Paul. In hindsight, that trade was a colossal screw-up.
Let's stay still. Until the Clippers, Lakers, Denver, Utah, Portland were acting like donkeys out there in free agency, and they realized, what are we going to do?
All right, Uncle Jimmy, you got a take on Chris Paul.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you got a take on Chris Paul?
Yeah, I do, man. Honestly, I like Chris Paul.
Yes.
He's a nice little fella. You know, he's a good player, likable guy, president of the NBA union. Kind of John Stockton-ish.
You would put Chris Paul's legacy on the same as John Stockton. John Stockton's the all-time assist leader. I don't know, but close.
Well, first of all, everybody loved John Stockton.
Right there. Yeah. Right there.
Yeah, I mean, did John Stockton, he didn't win no ring either, did he?
No, he did not. No,
a lot of people think he should have won a ring, though, didn't he?
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, just a little bit, huh?
Played the Jordan era, so that's tough.
That's all I'm saying. So it's very apropos, shall we say.
So, all right, how are you going to
remember? Let's be honest. Let me tell you what Chris Paul is going to be remembered for, and I'm going to be 100 with you. Yeah. His commercials.
You think that's what gonna overshadow his career?
No, I'm saying that's what happens to mostly all great athletes when their career is done. They're remembered for their commercial.
For their commercial.
Let's go.
Yeah, for real. Okay, let me give you an example. When I say this name, what come to your mind?
Okay.
O.J. Simpson.
Don't do that. It wasn't a commercial. It was commercial.
Look, first of all, let me tell you something. O.J. was the first black athlete endorsed by a major corporation.
Hurts.
Remember that?
Yeah, I remember the Hurts.
Remember that? Running through the airport, right? Remember? Them commercials was big.
He running through the airport, running from TSA, jumping over, you know, jumping over suitcases and stuff, jumping over barricades.
They didn't have TSA.
Remember, people were screaming, talking about, go, OJ, go. He ran through the rental car place, jumped straight into the white Bronco, took off, going down to 405. People screaming, hanging off the bridge, go, OJ. Go, OJ. Kind of like a Puffy video.
That was a commercial.
Stop.
That you know, well, yeah, that y'all, you didn't like that. Hey, I got another one. Hold on. I got another one.
Yeah, all right.
Peyton Manning. What's he famous for?
Super Bowls.
Super Bowls in Omaha.
Papa John's Pizza.
No.
Man, he's the one that came up with the one-topping $5.99 Saturday special. Carry out. I understand y'all been out here in L.A. living high on the hog.
Carry out.
Y'all don't understand. Y'all don't understand. Peyton Manning made gourmet meals affordable for the American family.
Anybody else?
Somebody.
I don't think Papa John's a good one.
Wait, was Papa John's or was it not sponsored by the NFL?
Yeah, he was.
I rest my case.
OJ.
Hey, that ain't good enough for you? No, Let me try one more.
Please do.
Mean Joe Green.
Oh, you got us there.
Remember the commercial?
You got us there.
Remember the after the game, he drinking a bottle of Coke. Remember he drinking a bottle.
That little boy. Yeah.
And there's a little boy standing over there. You thought he was going to throw the bottle at the little kid, but instead he threw the jersey at him. Right? I was a little disappointed, but you know. Hey, man, the little boy had the jersey and he like, oh, thanks, Mean Joe. And then, you know, the tagline came up, you know, have a Coke and a smile.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Now, let me say this. This is why y'all had me on the show, because I fill in the blanks that y'all don't know about. Y'all know who was supposed to play that part? Lawrence Taylor. He kept on messing up the lines.
Oh, God.
Kept on talking about, all y'all got to do is just have some Coke and smile. That's all you got to do. Have some Coke and a smile. You'll be all right. You know what I'm saying? He kept on messing the line up, man. He threw the little kid a mirror with some rolled up $100 bills on it. Man, the producer like, cut! Man, just, he like, look, Lawrence, just sing the song. Just sing. Lawrence like, I like to teach the world to snort. In perfect harmony.
And man, leave LT alone.
Echoes through those hills.
Leave LT alone. Let me get to my approval rating for man. Chris Paul.
I got a gold jacket.
That was amazing.
I dropped him.
Hurry
I dropped him to
I need
a 67.
More, I need more Uncle Jimmy. Hurry up.
I dropped him to a 67. Yeah. 64, 67. He's a role player right now, down
Ooh.
From an all-star.
Role staff. Player. Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. That contract and a role player? That's tough. I got him at 79. I did drop him as well. He was dealing with a lot. I had to give him character points because, man, the burden he was dealing with. He still putting James Harden in them commercials and you don't even like the dude?
And he burnt your house down.
Now, give me some more of that LT, though.
And he burnt your house down.
He burnt your house down.
All right, that's it for us this week.
The LT.
Oh, but
we'll
the
be back on Monday.
The beard is dope.
That is the best.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.